Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And
person
this
person who I don't know.
Yeah. And this is Sell or Die, real-world sales talk. No bullshit, no tricks.
Oh. And we are interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development. And we're doing it live. Why do we do it live? Because we like making mistakes. And and you make sales calls live. So why wouldn't we be live doing this podcast in the moment? No pre-taping. We're not pre-taping. And you don't pre-tape your sales presentation. Come on, dude.
That's right. Reading every single one of your questions, the man behind the glass, our amazing producer, Doug Branson. Hi, Doug.
Off camera.
Yeah. Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. A reminder to our listeners, you can listen to us live on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock p.m. And make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Sell or Die. And while you're there, leave us a five-star review. Yeah, you can listen to us live soon on YouTube.com and on Facebook.com on your respective pages.
Please.
And on your respective YouTubes.
Right.
Please.
Yeah.
And join us live. I think the whole show is going to take on a major dynamic once the video is right.
I think there's a difference between being able to see someone and hear someone. And it's one thing when you get to hear them, like you're driving in your car. But it's another thing when you get to watch it live and really see it. I mean, imagine if you could just listen to the debate versus watch the debate. I want to watch it. I want to see.
I don't want to do either at this point. And speaking
yes,
of Toastmasters.
It's going to be pretty funny.
And coming up, we are toasting Toastmasters tonight, a group that can help you with your public speaking skills, your presentation skills, and obviously with your sales.
Plus, we reveal our own public speaking horror stories.
Who's the we? Person I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
So let's get to it. It's time to sell or die. Good music. I really like the music.
I know. I like our music, too. Well done, Chris and Doug.
So today's show.
Will revolve around Toastmasters, a group that Jeffrey and I are both very familiar with and have been members of. The first question that you may be thinking is, what's Toastmasters?
Toastmasters is a bunch of clubs all over the world where people get together to learn presentation skills. They learn to give little speeches, both prepared and impromptu. And they're basically supported by other people that are in the group. It's literally a speaking support group. It's like, you know, like AA, this is SS.
Speaking support?
Yeah.
I like that. And it's important because no matter where you go, whether you're in sales or you're not in sales, you need to be able to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
And with Toastmasters, you learn how to best communicate and how to best articulate what you're trying to say and how to transfer your message.
It's a very inexpensive personal development program that you dedicate a little bit of time to, but not a lot of money.
You know, I think the cost really comes through your time, because it's not just the time you're attending the meetings, because there are meetings.
Yeah.
It's the time it takes to prepare those presentations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the real cost of the program, so to speak, comes through. But it's definitely worth it.
It's an investment. And you either decide you're going to invest your time to get better or not. And salespeople live or die by their presentation skills, not by their pitch.
Jeffrey, were you ever in Toastmasters?
I was. In the 90s. Many of you remember the 90s. Many of you were born in the 90s. In the 90s, I joined Toastmasters in Charlotte, the Queen City Toastmasters Club, and I stayed for a little over a year. I think it was 92, 93. And there I developed literally an ability to see myself in front of a group. And then I started to give speeches outside the group to civic organizations. And once my column was in the paper, you know, I wrote every week for the business journals. Once my column was in the paper, it was easy for me to be able to give more talks. It's practice. But Toastmasters gave me the rules. they set the foundational standards.
And it gave you a safe place to practice.
Oh, yeah.
So you could screw up in front of the people in your group, and they would still clap. They would still applaud you. Like, exactly. Yeah, well done. Glad you tried that one.
Our group was all about ribbons. Everybody got a ribbon for everything.
I didn't bring you a ribbon today. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I knew about the ribbons, but I forgot them at home.
It felt good when you got a ribbon for, you know, it's like going to the state fair.
I know. You were in this group in the 90s, and you've kept your ribbons.
I did. I saved all my ribbons. But I became a certified Toastmaster, and that meant I gave 10 speeches, and I built my skills both promptu and impromptu. I don't know what the
promptu and impromptu. I like that.
But it's an important thing for each person who's in sales to invest their time, not just their money, invest their time in the skill that Toastmasters offers.
Absolutely. So I've got a few stats for you, Jeffrey, from Toastmasters.org. Okay. So okay. I want to play a quick numbers game. I'm going to say the number.
Okay.
And then you're going to tell me what you think it might be.
Okay. And we don't know each other, right?
No, I don't know you.
Okay,
who are
cool.
you? Hello, person I don't know. Okay. The first one, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. The first one is 15,900.
Those are the people who have to leave the room in the middle of somebody else's speech.
Because the person's speech sucks so much?
Right.
Oh. No, 15,900 is the number of clubs there are worldwide for Toastmasters.
I know there's a couple dozen of them in the Charlotte area.
Yeah, and there's like, I think like 100 of them in just like New
Manhattan,
York alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The second number is 52%.
Oh, that's easy. That's the number of people who complete the course.
Oh, that's so interesting. I wonder what that's
not the right number.
I wonder what the number is that of people who complete the course. 52% of all Toastmasters are female.
Oh my goodness gracious.
I know. I threw that in for the ladies out there.
52% of all the people in the world are female. Isn't there like a correlation to that number or something?
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, this is the last one. 27%.
27% are the people who leave Toastmasters and immediately go out and make a sale after the meeting.
That's it. I would think it's the opposite. Like
74%.
Yeah, 74%, exactly. all right, so this is a really interesting stat. This is my favorite one. 27% of all Toastmaster members earn $100,000 or more.
Oh, that's cool.
So if you think about it, the average member's annual household income is $50,000 to $75,000. So if someone told you, if you join Toastmasters, if you join this club, you have a 27% chance of joining the Six Figures Club, would you do it?
Sure you would. It's only like $100 to join.
That is like $36.
Well, it depends on where you are. In Manhattan, it might be $100, but in Charlotte, it's like $35.
Oh, gotcha.
That's not a lot.
Okay.
So let me tell you something. You never want to go into any public speaking scenario, Toastmasters or otherwise, feeling tired or having the pre-speech kind of nervousness. So the best thing to do is fire it up, baby, with some Death Wish coffee. Slam down a little coffee, get yourself rolling, and you'll go up to that podium and feel like a million grams of caffeine.
That's right, because Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee made from the strongest possible combination of
perfectly
roasted beans. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. We drink it in the studio when we do the show.
Exactly.
We drink it before talks. We drink it all the time. Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
We love Death Wish.
We do. Once you try it, we want you to contact us and tell us how much you love it.
Yeah,
because we know you're going to love it.
A couple of posts a week on
we
it.
We do. So. We get a few emails.
Sellordie@gittimer.com is that email for the contact.
Okay,
that's
cool.
Right.
Or
thank
you can
you,
go on Sellordie. Instagram and just tag me.
Yeah, just tweet it or whatever. A lot of people will tweet their a picture with their Death Wish coffee bag and tag us. It's pretty cool.
It's Death Wish Coffee for those of you who are looking for the logo.
Deathwishcoffee.com.
Exactly.
So, Jeffrey, what's up?
Well, Jen, this has been a pretty interesting week. You know, the week goes by very quickly.
Hmm.
It's already Wednesday.
It is?
And
earlier today, you told me it was Thursday.
I know. It feels like Thursday. I thought it was Friday.
You told me tomorrow is Friday.
For those of you who are interested, I bowled 100 today, which in bowling language is like so piss poor. It's not
even
fun.
Yeah, but you came in first place.
Right, to tell you who I was bowling against. I beat a bunch of 7-year olds.
Oh yeah.
But
wait, how many games did it take you to get to 100?
Only the one. For those of you who are just listening for the first time, that's our producer, Doug Branson.
He's pretty funny.
Yeah, and he used to be very silent, very demure, and now he's like stepping on everybody else's windpipe. I kind of like it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Way to go, Doug.
But what's going on in the world of sales this week is pretty interesting. We're in the fall. This is like the fourth quarter where people are having to go for their sales to, quote, make
sell
their
or die time.
Right, to make their number.
Yeah.
When, in fact, they should have made their number by the end of July.
Mm-hmm.
They should have made their number by Q2.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys that have made it or the women that have made it are gloating right now.
So my best sales rep, I think her second or third year into the job, got pregnant. And she was due in like October, November and January when we gave out the quotas.
By the way, where do sales management teams get quotas from?
Oh, they like throw darts against the wall.
No, they pull them out of their ass. And and that.
Yeah, it's pretty true.
We're going
to
go
I've
for 11.
I've had to make them before. It's pretty true.
Exactly. Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, so a few months into the year, she tells me that she's pregnant. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm banking on her to make quota for my whole team to make quota. What am I going to do? And she looks me straight in the eye and she goes, Jen, I'm going to make my quota in August.
Oh,
and
cool.
I look at her and I'm like, yes, you
which
are.
You,
yes, you
which
are.
Which tells
amazing.
You as a salesperson, you get a number whenever your fiscal year is or January, and you think, oh, I can never make this number.
Mm-hmm.
And my statement to you is, no, dude, you could double it.
She did.
All you have to do is work your ass off and create a pipeline of double, and you win.
Yeah, she made her quota way before she gave birth, and she was working the day up until she went to the hospital. I mean, that is what every salesperson should be doing.
So what's going on right now is scramble. Every salesperson who has a fourth quarter quota, say that three times real fast, is scrambling right now because it's October and they don't want to miss their number. Their boss is getting pressure from above. The salespeople are getting pressures from their spouses. Where's my money? And this is the time to sell or die. Literally, this whole program is dedicated to the salesperson who's out there fighting for the quota. And maybe we can give him or her just one little tip, one little idea that will help them.
Yeah, and one thing that we're going to talk about on today's show is Toastmasters, because
very
if they
segue,
become
Jen.
Better
very
public
good
speakers,
segue.
If they be- I'm getting a thumbs up from Doug, by the
okay,
way.
Okay, good.
If they become better public speakers, they can more easily make their quota.
Okay.
So
what, I know. What, I see. I see
okay.
My name.
Yeah.
So we have an expert that we're going to bring in to talk to us, who's a president of a Toastmasters Club, a founder of a Toastmasters Club. Her name is Olive Persimmon. And Jen, I understand that you know her.
I met her at Toastmasters.
Ah.
In New York City. Olive Persimmon is a writer and a speaker. She's, as you said, the president of a Toastmasters Club. She's the president of Humorous Toastmasters. So it's not just Toastmasters.
It's
people who want to be great speakers and add humor to their talks. And when I was looking for a Toastmasters club, that's exactly what I was looking for. And I just Googled Humorous Toastmasters thinking like, not knowing there would be a club named Humorous Toastmasters. And that's how I found it, oddly enough. Anyway, she's the author of the comedy book, Unintentionally Celibate. And she's working on the sequel right now called The Coitus Chronicles.
Oh my God.
Her book is really good. I have a copy.
I'm sure it's wonderful.
No, it's pretty funny.
I'm sure it's hysterical.
And it's I think it's based on real life. So she teaches public speaking.
It's all about a girl who couldn't get the bed.
I didn't know you could write about being celibate and make money. I would have made $1 million in high school.
Exactly.
So she teaches public speaking and storytelling, and she's been an active Toastmaster for 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, there you darn go. So let's, we talked to her actually yesterday. She's an exceptionally interesting person. And I think fascinating from a standpoint of both Toastmasters and the art and science of public speaking. So let's take a listen.
A lot of our listeners have never been to a meeting before. What's it like when you get there? Yeah. So Toastmasters is a public speaking club, and it's divided into two sections. And the first section is prepared speaking, and the second section is impromptu speaking. So that means like speaking off the cusp, basically.
I think they call the first one table topics or something.
Yeah, they call the second part table topics. So the first part, you'll have like three speakers. They come in, they give usually a 5 to 7 minute speech. And then the second part, the table topics, you'll maybe like pull a question out of a hat, or you'll do like an improv game, and you'll have no idea what's coming, and you'll have to get comfortable with, you know, being able to say stuff when you haven't had time to prepare.
And which one do you prefer?
I love both, because I love speaking, but I actually prefer prepared speaking. So I like to sit down, think about what I'm going to say, the exact right way I want to say it, and then give a speech that uses the words and the phrases I want to use.
I think, though, from the salespeople, if you're a salesperson and you're listening to this podcast, I think you would benefit by joining Toastmasters and hoping that you were selected for the impromptu part, because that's where your clients or your potential clients are going to challenge you with questions, and you have to come up with oftentimes impromptu answers.
Yeah, but you need both. You need to be prepared. You need to be prepared, like Becky is saying, with what you're going to pitch or offer. And then, of course, the impromptu part. So is it fun? Is it funny? Like, what happens during that section?
Well, it depends on your comfort level. For most people, when you first show up, it's probably not fun at all, because maybe you have anxiety with, you know, speaking on your feet or being able to speak in an elevator when you're with the boss or whatever. Some people show up and they like it. The more you do it, the more natural it becomes, and the more natural it becomes, the more fun it becomes. And I think that's true with selling too, probably, right?
Sure. Are there levels? Can you join a more sophisticated club or a beginner's club? How does that work?
Yeah. So you can look online. You just go you can just Google Toastmasters International, and you can look online. There are some advanced clubs that you can join. You have to complete 10 speeches. And once you complete 10 speeches, you're called a competent communicator. And once you do that, you can join. Yeah, I know. You're a competent communicator. Once you do that, you can join some of the advanced clubs.
And what do you think is the best benefit that you've had from Toastmasters that somebody sitting out in our audience would go, oh, man, I got to join for that reason?
I mean, for anyone who feels uncomfortable speaking, it is a place to go to practice consistently giving speeches. And public speaking, whether you love it or hate it, is a muscle. And if you do not exercise it, the amount of anxiety you feel will probably return. So it's just a place to go where you can practice and get feedback and essentially reduce the level of anxiety you feel about public speaking.
So it gives you confidence or added confidence?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that the more, it's one of those things, it's like anything, the more you do it, the more confident you feel about it. Even if you love public speaking, that's true.
Jen, were you in Toastmasters?
I was for like a hot minute, but my travel schedule got grueling. That's how Olive and I met, actually, at Toastmasters.
Uh-huh. Oh.
So Olive, I've seen you speak, and you're incredible. But my question is,
thank you.
When you started Toastmasters, did you have anxiety about speaking? Because you're saying anyone who's scared of speaking should go. You don't seem like, I don't know, maybe I'm just jumping to my own conclusion,
but
you don't seem scared.
I'd say there are two, you can go to Toastmasters because one, you're afraid of speaking, or two, you love public speaking.
Or three, your boss made you go.
Or three, your boss made you go, usually because you hate public speaking. For me, it was more, I love public speaking, and I wanted to be better at it. I wanted to really hone my craft and my skills. That's not to say I didn't have a certain level of anxiety. There were times I would give speeches and my kind of tell is I'll just turn bright red and start hiving. And then you're freaking out about turning red and hiving. So then you turn even redder and hive even more, which is not cute. You're not gonna, not cute, not a cute look. But, so for me, there was some level of anxiety, I would say in the beginning, but now I quite love it. I quite love the art of speaking.
And how do you encourage somebody? Suppose somebody's in our audience and they're listening. How would you encourage them to show up at a Toastmasters meeting if they're in a big city or if they're in a small city? Because big city, you got a lot of choices. Small city, you may only have one or two clubs.
Yeah. The best thing to do is to get online first and find a club. And what I would say, and I teach public speaking too, and what I say to the people who come to classes, you're always in life going to have to find your voice. Right? Like if this is a skill that you're afraid of, you cannot run from it and hope to get a promotion or hope to be heard in the boardroom or hope to be the best salesman at your company. You just can't. You have to be comfortable using your voice. And public speaking is a part of that. So to convince people to go, what I would say is it's really such an important investment in yourself that you just have to be willing to commit to that.
What are some, over the past 5 years, what are some success stories that you've seen?
In Toastmasters?
Yeah.
I mean, with people who were afraid or people who were...
Like someone shows up and they like can't even get through their name on stage and now they're the best speaker on the planet. I mean, that's pretty, you know, that's two extremes, but does that happen? What have you seen?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I have a great story. A good friend of mine, we started around the same time. So she's been a Toastmaster for 5 years. She showed up, English is her second language, so she felt very uncomfortable, not just giving speeches, but speaking up in meetings, using her voice. She joined Toastmasters, and my God, the difference is so incredible, because she used to come in, she would be so quiet, you couldn't hear her at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now she speaks confidently, and she was promoted twice in the last, 2 years, and she credits it 100% to Toastmasters. She said it taught her how to, one, communicate more diplomatically, and then, two, it taught her to kind of find her voice and use it when it was necessary.
That's pretty cool. I think that, in the Toastmaster Club that I joined a number of years ago, and I did my 10 speeches, I think that it gave the people, and some had to be there because their boss made them go, some because they wanted to go, some were retired people who had nothing to do. But it was overall, it was a fun experience and one that you got to know the other people as well. You know, you kind of knew their life and you kind of knew their stuff and you watched them grow.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things too, because it's really ultimately at the end of the day, just storytelling. Right. And that's true for selling a lot of times. That's true for, any kind of speech you do, you're creating a story. And so you're right. You get to hear all these really cool stories about your fellow members. And that's kind of nice. It made me feel good. Like I'd go to the meetings, I'd hear people's stories and you'd feel pretty good afterwards.
Now, I heard that does everyone still get a ribbon?
Not in my club. I'm in a club called Humorous Toastmasters. And we give a ribbon to the funniest person at each meeting. So there's like one person at the meeting who's like funniest Toastmaster. once you complete your 10 speeches, you get an award and you get acknowledgement.
A ribbon ain't cheap, Jeffrey.
Yeah, but the Toastmasters are a bunch of cheap bastards. We at my club, we got a first, second, and third prize for the three, for the three prepared speeches.
Wait, what is second place?
Second place is first loser, but it was, you got a blue ribbon, a red ribbon, and I think a yellow ribbon. I can't remember.
For every single meeting?
Yeah.
Listen, we can't all be in elite clubs like you
no,
are.
No, I Some wanted the blue ribbon every time. If I didn't get a blue ribbon, I felt like I was a total loser. And once I lost one time. It pissed me off so bad.
That's funny too, though, because this is about finding a club. It's about finding a club that works for you, because I think that I compete occasionally. Toastmasters has like contests where you can compete.
Uh-huh.
And I find I really don't like the competition aspect of it. For me, it feels like too much pressure.
Oh, come on.
No, really. I just don't like it.
You give a speech. Those contests are cool. You win and you get accolades and prizes. I never got to the winning level of the thing. I joined the National Speakers Association before I completed anything beyond my certified, because you can get like a DTM too, right? A Distinguished Toastmaster.
Yeah.
But that means you have to start a club. It's all self-perpetuating, I think.
The cool thing is, even if you don't win a ribbon, everyone claps for you.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
There's a lot of clapping in Toastmasters. It's really good place to go to make you feel good about whatever you need to feel good about.
We had a thing in our Toastmasters club that if you got up to go to the bathroom, everyone clapped for you. And I was trying, at the end, I was trying to get them a standing ovation, but my club wouldn't go for it.
I do that for my roommates. I mean, if they get up, I give them a round of applause.
Uh-huh. But that gives you that camaraderie, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think the coolest thing about Toastmasters is it combines public speaking and community. So camaraderie really is the right word. It's a group of people that support you and want to see you succeed. And that kind of diminishes some of the fear you might have around public speaking.
And for those of you who are looking for how much does it cost, can you tell the audience how much it does cost?
Yeah, it actually depends on each club. So there's international dues, which I don't know the exact price. And then there's also club dues. So honestly, it's totally dependent on which clues.
I thought it's like $3 million.
No, yeah. Ken, it's $500,000. But it's cash.
Okay. Well, for your club, because of all the ribbons.
No, it's like in Charlotte, I can tell you, it's $30 for 6 months.
For my club, it's $110 for the year.
Yeah. It's cheap. And
that's pretty good.
Yeah. And if you're a salesperson out there and you're thinking, maybe my boss will pay for me, let me give you clue one. You have your own money now, and you can begin to invest it in yourself. For self-improvement. Toastmasters is about gaining confidence and gaining capability to speak, and it will endure, it lasts forever. So my personal recommendation.
Olive, what are some tips for people when they first join Toastmasters to really get involved and quickly?
Yeah, that's a great question, because so often we see people come and they sit in the back for like six meetings because they're just afraid of saying something, and I get that. So I would say show up, and no matter how uncomfortable you feel, volunteer for a role, volunteer for a table topic, and really try to get going as soon as you can.
So get involved in the group kind of thing?
Yeah, volunteer. So there are different roles in every meeting, like somebody is like a timer, somebody something they call a grammarian. So you want to volunteer for those roles, but also just volunteer to do table topics. That's the impromptu speaking. So they'll ask, they'll say like, does anyone want to volunteer to do this? And raise your hand, even if you feel like you're going to die.
And don't they have like the icebreaker speech or something where it's your first speech?
Yeah. Yeah. So your first speech is called your icebreaker. It's a short speech. And I would say volunteer to do your icebreaker as soon as you can. Otherwise you might lose some momentum.
And you've been around public speaking for a long time. What's the importance of public speaking in a world that is becoming more dependent on digital forms of communication?
That is an excellent question. What I would say to that is communication in all forms is always going to be pretty much the benchmark of anything you want to be successful at. You have to be able to communicate your message, and you still have to do that verbally, especially if you're in sales. You have to do that over the phone, right? Or you have to do that in person at a pitch. I don't think the art of speaking verbally is even close to being gone. So if that's what you're saying, it's not even close to being kind of a remote skill.
It's not just verbal, it's confident and verbal. And I think that Toastmasters gives you that quiet confidence. I watched some of the people in my group gain incredible confidence. I was in my group for about a year. And over the course of that time, you got to know the other people, but you also watched them grow.
Yeah, that's definitely it. People come in and they'll be very shy and they'll look at the ground and they won't make coherent thoughts. They'll be like rambling because they're anxious. And then you're right, Jeffrey, it's incredible. They'll give brilliant speeches in a confident tone of voice. Their body language is completely different.
And then they get applause. And then they get even if you suck, you get applause, right?
Yeah. And maybe a ribbon.
So what do you tell someone who is scared to get up there? A lot of people have fear. And how do they mitigate that fear?
Yeah, the first you have to just do it. So, you know, people always want like an easy fix, like, okay, if you eat 4 chocolate pieces of blah, 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 that'll reduce your anxiety. And there's stuff like that out there, but really the best way to get rid of your fear is you have to continually put yourself in situations where you are in front of an audience talking, right? And then the first time, what happens a lot of times, your body goes into fight or flight mode. Your heart rate increases, your adrenaline increases, all sorts of weird things happen to your body. But the first time you go up in front of people and you don't die or pass out, those symptoms are going to start to reduce the more you do it. So really the number one piece of advice for if you're terrified of public speaking is you have to overcome that fear by putting yourself in that situation consistently.
Some idiot wrote a book called Picture Them Naked, where their actual advice was to picture the people in the audience naked, and that would reduce the amount of stress that you had. But I can tell you, having given a lot of speeches, there are some people in my audiences that I would not want to see naked.
I was just going to say the exact same thing. I don't want to see my audience naked.
Exactly. But
what if it was somebody who was like really good looking? Then that would make me even more anxious thinking about them naked.
Let me just say this. If you're not prepared to give your speech, you're going to have anxiety. The more prepared you are, the less anxiety you have. Plain and simple.
Yes.
There's no to eat chocolate, drink coffee, stand on your head, spit wooden nickels. There's none of that that's going to make you any more confident than your own preparation.
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you said that because it's so often I hear from people, they're like, I'm just going to wing it. I'm like, that is a terrible idea. Or they'll say like, oh, you know, I have a big presentation at work and I don't want to sound robotic. So I'm going to do it kind of impromptu. And I'm like, no, you're going to sit down and you're going to practice it. And then you're going to practice it again. And then you're going to practice it again. And then you're going to do it until you sound fake. And then you're going to keep practicing until you sound real again. Because you're right. Preparation is pretty much probably the most important thing you can do.
Yep. Nothing beats it. Okay, so I think just from a standpoint of Toastmasters, if you go over your time, you lose automatically, right?
Well, so my club doesn't have like a winning or – oh, you mean like in a contest?
No, I'm talking about this interview.
You can put up the red card. You just put up the red card, Jeffrey.
Exactly. Exactly. That
means
what
happens if they keep going?
Like, you got a minute to
multiple
go.
Multiple red cards.
And Jen, you and I we're gonna go to a Toastmasters meeting together and crash the place. What do you think?
Cool. Let's do it.
We're gonna give a couple of impromptu speeches to the Toastmaster people.
And bring a box of ribbons too.
I'll bring my own ribbon. Right.
Maybe you can mail me some ribbons. I'll use them for my club.
We're always having fun here on Sell or Die. Thank you so much to Olive Persimmon. She is a fabulous writer, an amazing speaker coach, and she's funny. She's fun. You can learn more about her and where you can pick up her books at olivepersimmon.com.
So I want to like throw in the final word on Toastmasters because I graduated from Toastmasters, went into professional speaking, whatever you would call that. And it worked. It created a foundation for me. I was disciplined into having to give a speech every month or so, but dealing with the Toastmaster stuff, the impromptu stuff, trying to win a ribbon all the time, maybe even hanging out with the people afterwards to have a cup of coffee, which was before coffee was even in vogue. But the bottom line—
They didn't even have Death Wish back then.
No. Death Wish coffee, you mean? The kind of coffee we drink every week at Sell or Die?
Yeah, deathwishcoffee.com. Yeah.
Strongest coffee in the world?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, they're getting traction.
Oh, yeah.
They're moving to the next level, and we had them first. I think that Toastmasters is an endeavor that every single person in sales should do. In my club, there were 3 or 4 people that their boss made them go. Like, seriously, you don't care about yourself enough to go on your own?
Maybe some people don't realize that they need to go.
The hell with your boss. He's probably or she's probably some kind of a pushy jerk anyway, trying. You know what I mean? This is for you.
There are pushy people in Charlotte besides
me? No, I apologize. There's not. There's no, but the bottom line is don't do this because somebody else tells you to do it.
Yeah.
Just do it for yourself. Toastmasters is an amazing club and you should join tomorrow.
Well done, Jeffrey. It's almost like they paid you for that.
Thank you. Well, they don't.
We should send them a bill.
They don't pay anybody.
All right. So let's talk about public speaking.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I say so.
Okay.
We've all got public speaking horror stories. I have one of my own.
I can't wait to hear it.
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, I'll tell you.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'm in my 20s, and I'm up for a big promotion at my former job. And my boss
tells
me...
Wait a minute. You say you're in your 20s like you're in your 50s.
Well, I'm not in my 20s anymore.
Several years ago, once you started...
No, it was like more than that. But anyway, I'm up for this big... Jeffrey, I'm almost in my mid-30s.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So I'm at my former job, and I'm up for this major promotion, like a career-changing promotion. And mm-hmm. my boss says to me, you're going to get the promotion... If you put together this cross-functional team, and in 2 or 3 days from now, you host this big offsite meeting where you give this major presentation and get everyone on the cross-functional team, by the way, who no one wanted to be on this team, to get their buy-in, sell them on the idea and the project, and explain to them why it's going to help them and the company and all that. And give this killer presentation.
Mostly the company.
Right, mostly the company. So anyway.
Kind of a Wells Fargo kind of thing before Wells Fargo.
No, it wasn't like that. But so I have to give this presentation. I've never given such a major presentation before. I've given sales pitches, but not presentations to my colleagues, which, by the way, I think is more scary pitching to your own colleagues than people you don't know. And I get up there and I think, and I don't really know much about public speaking other than you have to, this is what I know at the time, you have to start with a joke because you need to start with being funny. That's what people had told me. So I get up there and I kill the joke. Like I don't say it correctly and it's not funny at all. No one laughing. Everyone's just looking at me and I'm freezing and freaking out. My right hand guy stands up to try and save me because he knew my presentation better than I did at that point. And he gets me to the next part. Finally, about 10 minutes in, after I've lost everyone's engagement and attention, I calm my nerves down and I'm able to get through it enough to at least give some sort of presentation and get people's buy-ins and move on from this horrific event. But it was devastating to me because I sucked. I got up there and I failed. I mean, I failed miserably. And part of it was my nerves. Part that I really let them get to me. Part of it was I was unprepared. I didn't have any idea how you prepare for a talk. I didn't know how much hours could go into a 2-hour talk, that maybe 20 hours, maybe 40 hours, maybe 50 hours of preparation could go into a 2-hour talk. To me, that seemed crazy. You should just be able to show up and talk. Well, no.
So I rest my case going back to what I told Olive at the end of her monologue, that the only thing that really matters in public speaking is preparation. If you prepare well, you will not be nervous, plain and simple. Oh, you have to have a little bit of nervous. That's bullshit.
People
have told me for years, well, I always have a little bit of anxiety. Right, because you're afraid that the audience is going to ask you a question that you can't answer, and it all boils back to lack of preparation.
And by the way, you don't have to start with a joke.
No, you can start with something funny.
Yeah,
but you don't.
Like you can tell a funny story that you're familiar with.
Right.
Yeah,
I do.
Right, I do too now. Anyway, I vowed that day to myself that I would take public speaking classes and become the best speaker on the planet because I did not want to fail at something. And I took a 2-day course at Dale Carnegie, then I took a 3-day course at Dale Carnegie, and I really learned to talk.
So let me share with you a couple of ideas. I don't want to call them tips. I want to call them just suggestions that you can take or guidelines that you should follow when you are giving a speech. The first thing you have to know is who's going to be in the audience and what are they hoping to hear from you. The second thing you have to know is how much time do you have to speak? Nothing worse than a speaker going over time, especially for the next speaker. And thirdly, you better be expert at what you're doing. You have to know it better than you know your name. And you have to know it in a way where It's not memorized from your head, but you're speaking from your heart. When politicians use those teleprompter things, I want to go and unplug them and say, okay, you bastard, what do you really
want to tell us?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We just had 8 years of our leader who never spoke without a teleprompter, carried like 20 teleprompters with him at all times because he couldn't speak extemporaneously or didn't want to, whatever. And that's not the leader I want. I want a guy who can speak without a teleprompter.
Well, let's not go into politics right now.
Okay.
We can save that for another show.
Right.
But, you know, if you're listening.
Did you have another show in mind or did you just want to leave?
No, I just want to keep people hanging.
Okay,
so
cool.
If you're listening, you may have a horror story like I did, and it's almost Halloween. We want to hear your horror story.
Yeah.
Stories. That four times fast. Send them to us via email, sellordie@gittimer.com or on Twitter @gittimer or @sales.
Make the subject line trick or speak.
Yeah, trick
and that or way
speak.
We'll know exactly what it is.
So you can tweet us @gittimer or @Jen in a New York Minute because we want to hear them and we're going to share them on the show anonymously next week. We don't want to embarrass you.
Yes, we do.
It's going to be anonymous. We'll give you cool usernames or whatever.
Yeah.
But we want to hear your stories.
By the way, if we're not going to be kind to you, we're going to say, and here's one from Dipshit from New Jersey.
That's the code.
That is the code.
So, Jeffrey, you have some public speaking tips, don't you?
I just gave them to you.
No, but you have some that you've recorded, and they're available on the Gittimer Learning Academy.
They're really a gem that people can listen to. Hold on, I think we're about to hear them.
Yeah, let's listen to them.
The old adage is, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Wrong. It's both. To convert a great presentation into a performance, it takes a perfect marriage of what you say and how you say it, or the audience will divorce you. I'm going to concentrate on how you say it, the squeak. If you deliver the greatest presentation in the world with no enthusiasm, sincerity, or belief, you're going to lose. In the beginning of a performance, there are four elements that determine whether you'll get your way or not. The first is rapport. Putting yourself on the same side of the fence with the audience. Can they relate to you? Number two is need, determining what the audience deems as the factors that will influence their motivation to listen with the intent to act. Do your words fulfill their needs? Number three is importance, the transferability and urgency of your message. Are they willing to try it? Number four is confidence, your ability to gain comfort and build assurance that there's a limited risk and a maximum reward for seeing the message your way. While all the information from these elements can be acquired by asking the right questions, the difference between good and great performers is the way they present or deliver their message. Your speaking skills must be used throughout the entire performance, but they're critical at the start because they create an impression and set a tone for the rest of the performance. I've compiled a list of essential skills and definitions for implementation. Here are the strategic elements of how you say it. Speak clearly. Now that sounds simple, but if the audience doesn't understand you, maybe your accent or your dialect or you speak too fast or you jump around, your communication won't be understood and you won't get your way. Lean forward. Lean into the performance to give the listener the sense of importance and urgency. Don't fidget. Knuckle cracking, pocket jingling, or other nervous habits detract from the performance. Don't fumble. Fumbling around means you're not prepared. It makes the audience feel on edge and act impatient. It also makes them unsure of you. Don't or. Vocalized pauses, hesitations, and repeated words are so irritating. They make the audience focus on flaws rather than the message. The biggest cure for this is practice. Be animated. Wide-eyed as though you just had the most fantastic thing happen to you. Use lots of hand gestures. Not wild hand waving. Pointed, compelling gestures. Use a wide range of vocal variety. Loud and soft noises and voices. Not singing, but close. Go from high to low tones. Punch the critical words. Compel the audience to listen. And say it with style. Whisper some important stuff like it's a secret. Get your prospect or your audience to lean into your words. Make him or feel special to get your personal message. Stand up when you perform. It adds impact to your gestures and the story. Stand up or sit up straight. Posture determines the direction of your words. If you're stoop-shouldered or your words are spoken to the floor instead of the audience, they're not going to listen. Look them in the eye. Your eye contact is a telltale sign of credibility to the audience. Use direct eye contact. Looking at the other person in the eye is a confidence builder. Stay within the range of your audience's personality. If the audience is stuffy and conservative, don't get too wild. Say your words with conviction. Self-belief will account for a large portion of getting your way. Select the right words. Sound intelligent. You don't have to quote Shakespeare, but you do need to be a wordsmith. Use industry buzzwords. Build 10 new words into your vocabulary every week. Be prepared to screw up several performances as you begin your quest for eloquence. Look at it as a journey, not as a speech, and you'll realize that you only get from acceptable to good to great to greatest over an extended period of time. You are the vehicle. You are the messenger. I'm providing you the fuel and the message. The rest is up to you.
So there's a heck of a lot more on the Gittimer Learning Academy. If you want to learn more about giving a presentation and turning that presentation into a performance, I wrote the little green book of getting your way in order to be able to make that happen. And then when I recorded it, I realized like, wow, I have actually begun to say and show what it is that I'm trying to convey to the audience. And I'll tell you what, it's, if you don't get it, you're not investing in yourself. Not good. So I'm betting after those things and after Toastmaster and after your presentation, I'm betting that there's some people in our audience that have a few questions. What do you bet, Jenny?
I bet so, too.
Oh, Doug? Yeah. We've got plenty of questions from reddit.com/r/sales. First question coming from JKano2. JKano2 asks, how hard is it to sell life or health insurance? Is it harder than real estate, business to business? Is there more upside in selling insurance than business to business, or is it about the same?
There is no harder sell in the world than insurance.
Health insurance everyone needs, but life insurance no one wants.
Yeah, they all need it. Everyone needs insurance.
But no, you're required to have health insurance. Like,
yeah,
it's not an option anymore.
Yeah,
anymore.
Now they are, yeah.
But life insurance... But that's a hard sale.
Listen, there's a jillion people selling it. Everybody's got a relative. And it's a very, very difficult sell because the person who's selling it needs to be a trusted person before the sale can be made. And I'm not going to buy from somebody I don't know, especially insurance.
Yeah.
So why would somebody be able to cold call me and sell me insurance?
No, I mean, they probably couldn't. Real estate's a hard sale, too, because you could show 50 apartments to someone and then they could find an apartment online and decide to go forward without you. Or they could decide they're not buying this year.
For
and
the
now
uninformed,
sold-
people in New York City buy apartments. Other people
houses.
In the world buy a house.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that was very New York City centric. But, you know, you could show 50 houses to someone and then they could decide, eh, we're not going to buy this year. And now you've wasted all that time.
Just so, by the way, you can buy a great house in the suburb pretty much anywhere in this country for, I don't know, $250,000, $500,000. In New York City, you buy a two-bedroom apartment with 1,000 square feet and it's $2 million.
That's very true.
It's crazy.
And the smallest.
So I'm going to tell Jay Cano, is that like a Yankees guy? Wasn't he a Yankee player?
Cano, yeah.
That's Cano.
Yeah, he played second base. Well, they could be pronounced that way.
Jay Cano, right.
Yeah.
So I would tell him or her that health insurance, life insurance is the hardest sale that I can imagine.
But if you are a really good, if you become a trusted advisor, then
how the
insurance,
hell do you do that? He's
well, he might be able to become a trusted advisor. Anyone has that opportunity.
They tell you in insurance to go call on your grandma.
Okay, let's just say he becomes the best trusted advisor on the planet. Yeah. Insurance is a great business because there's recurring revenue year after year after year after
year. If you're willing to starve for 5 years and work your ass off, you could become a very successful real estate agent.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, or both. Or an insurance agent. Both. I agree.
Yeah. All right, what else, Doug?
Next question comes from Sales Newbie 2015. Well, I guess this person is now a sales one-year veteran. Needs help with his CRM. I'm 24 years old. I get knots in my stomach using this piece of shit, and I don't know where I can go to make it better. I'm sincerely considering setting up a filing system to stay off this damn system. We are a super small company and need the CRM to be a hub for email marketing, snail mail marketing, and phone marketing. We need to be able to export specific contacts for mail merges and occasional gifts. Desperately in need of a CRM recommendation from a couple of experts.
It's really funny that a 24-year-old is like threatening to go to paper. Like,
right.
That must be a really bad CRM.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to use paper. Oh my God, paper. There's a bunch of CRMs out there that are new and, you know, a few years old and pretty good. Some of them actually work with your Twitter feeds and Instagram feeds. So like if Jeffrey's in my CRM and I pull up his contact, it'll actually show all of his latest posts on social media, which is really cool. I've seen things like Insightly and Zoho. Those are pretty good. But at the end of the day,
nobody ever got fired for buying IBM. Salesforce.com is currently the industry leader, or Microsoft Dynamics is currently
Jeffrey,
the second
Salesforce
industry leader.
Salesforce only works if you customize it. It takes a ton. It is expensive, and it takes a ton of customization.
They're
a small company.
They're a 900-pound gorilla.
They're a small company.
They are?
Yes. It says we're a super small company.
Okay, then use Microsoft Dynamics. Use something that tags into your Outlook.
There are plugins if you use Google Apps for Business too. There's lots of plugins that can go right into.
Or maybe your company
Apps.
Will go to HubSpot. They have a CRM.
Yeah, they have a great sales CRM. We use their HubSpot. Yep. We use HubSpot CRM.
All right, next one is from FreightGuy1728. FreightGuy writes, "I am an outside sales rep for a freight brokerage company. The traditional way we acquire customers is through cold calling. Cold calling is brutal and never ending. Is there a way to draw customers to me instead? Customer retention is low across the industry in general, so I've been thinking about ways to bring in business through marketing and keep them. I have considered a website and social media, but not sure what avenues would work best since my company already has a website." What do you guys think?
Start a blog all about safe delivery, road safety, and other aspects of the freight business, like where are the most speed traps? How much does it cost to get stopped for speeding in Idaho? Why are you in Idaho to begin with? But all of the...
Where's that left turn to Albuquerque?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I should have turned left at Albuquerque. Bugs Bunny. I think if you have to post something that might have some attractiveness and might have some legs in terms of what people are searching for, but the 5 best truck stops in America, the 10 best truck stops in Cleveland, you know, something that someone might Google or try to find you of value. They're not going to buy your freight service. The freight services are pretty much a dime a dozen. You sell by an FCC code. You have, you know, so much per pound that's mandated by the government. So that's not going to be your differentiator. Your differentiator is your value.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you, Jenny.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, enough said for truckers.
All right, this is a
breaker,
good
breaker.
10-4, good buddy. This next question from Warriors 925. This is a philosophical question. Get ready, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm ready.
Asking, is there something...
Hold on, let me put on my John Paul Sharp t-shirt. All right, go ahead.
Warriors 925 asking, is there something you wish you would have known about when you started your sales career?
Yes. I wanted to know about companies that were going to go bankrupt before they placed a big order with me.
How many times did that happen?
Once, when I really needed the money. Abraham Strauss, New York City department store, they ordered 2,000 beanbags from me and stiffed me.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wish I would have known that I never really minded no's, but if someone, rejection, but I wish I would have known that you can make them fun. Mm-hmm. Because the minute you start to make rejection fun, it changes your entire sales outlook.
Do you know that I created a whole dialogue about cold calling people that when they cold call the first person in the morning and the person said, no, we're not interested, and you go, oh, great, I'm so happy you're not interested. Usually takes me about three or four people that are not interested before I can get to one that are that is interested. You're the first rejection that I've had in the morning. Do you know anybody else that might not be interested? And people would just stop in their tracks and howl. And, you make
it. That's exactly what I mean. Because they're laughing. You're in a good mood. You get off the phone. You don't care that you were rejected. Okay, next.
It's even funnier when you're face to face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because they don't know what to say. It's like it's a hysterical piece. And
so
would happen is guys would bring me into their sales team and say, you got to hear this. And I'd have to repeat it. And that's what started me on the path to thinking that I could teach this to other people.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, getting rejected and making cold calls. And if you go into a building where there's no soliciting and you give your, you walk into a thing and they throw you out, they can only throw you into the hallway. It's a public building. And I just had a great time at it.
Yeah, it can be a lot of fun.
Yep.
Doug, are there any other questions?
No, that's all the time we have for this week.
Oh, man. All right. Those are really great questions. And I know you have a sales question, a burning sales question, or even maybe a trick or speak. What are we calling it?
Huh?
Trick or speak.
Yeah, trick or speak.
Your horror story from speaking that you want to submit to us.
Don't tell me you went to somebody's house and they didn't give you candy. I don't want to hear that crap.
Well, maybe their candy pitch wasn't that good.
It's so interesting to me that people are willing to beg for one of those little Milky Way things. You just go to the grocery store and for $2 you can buy the whole.
See, the problem is too many kids are cold calling on Halloween. They're just going door to door.
All the day before.
You got to establish a relationship.
Go to the grocery store and beg for a bag. If you go to 5 grocery stores, I'll guarantee you one of them will give you a bag of candy.
I think we should trick or treat the day before Halloween.
Next week we're going to do doing Halloween all. We'll examine these scenarios.
I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So send your sales questions our way.
Okay.
Email them to sellordie@getemer.com right now, and we will answer them next week.
I'm all in. But it's now time for our famed weekly sales agenda. Open up your calendar app, and we're going to try to find 15 minutes in between surfing Facebook and making sure your boss isn't around, or to see that your old high school girlfriend put on a little weight, and try to help you with a few more ideas. Just one idea from each of us. Jenny's going to give an idea, and then I'm going to give an idea, and then we're going to say goodbye.
Okay, so this one is obvious, to me at least. Join Toastmasters and practice your public speaking. Sharpen your public speaking skills this week. Dedicate time to giving one new talk a week.
And mine is give a talk to somebody that you absolutely don't know. Go to a civic organization and volunteer to give your 10 or 20 minute talk, not about your product, about something. I gave talks for years on what we've learned from our children and on persuasion and, on persistence.
Oh, I like that.
And those two talks got me other talks. But it also allowed me to practice in front of an audience that was pretty much non-judgmental.
So it sounds like we have the same weekly agenda this week. Practice your public speaking.
Yep. Go out and give a talk.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Sell or Die podcast. We are back next week with more sales strategies that you can turn into money. Subscribe on iTunes and never miss an episode.
And thank you to our guest, Olive Persimmon, our producer, Doug Branson, our technical director, Chris Hill.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I am Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there in your Halloween costume and make a sale, even if your ass falls off.